going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The time for statehood for Washington, D.C. is now.
That's D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser yesterday leading a Pennsylvania Avenue parade calling for action on D.C. statehood. And tomorrow, for the first time in more than 25 years, there will be a congressional hearing on Capitol Hill on this issue. Are the chances better now than ever before? Well, my guests are talking about it. Kenyon McDuffie, Ward 5 D.C. Council member, Beverly Perry, senior advisor to D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, and Justin Yachty Johnson, community activist and founder of Long Live Go-Go. We're talking about this tonight, D.C. statehood. What do you think about the latest efforts to get this issue done? Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Harold.
Good to be back.
Justin, can you hear me?
Thanks for having me as well.
Let me ask you first, what would D.C. statehood mean for you personally? Why do you care?
Well, personally, I care because I think that at the moment I'm speaking up for a large youth audience, and I'm here basically just to like enlighten my community and just like put a lot of these things into layman terms and just help them to understand what is going on when we're talking about D.C. statehood. So for me, I think it just gives us an opportunity to have more power to make decisions and put things in place that could positively affect like our community without any congressional interference.
You said young people. How old are you?
Me, I'm 32.
You're 32. So when you talk about your peer group and putting this in layman's terms, what are you telling them?
Basically just try to enlighten them into what certain terms mean, like even something similar as far as legislation. I think a lot of the youth community and a lot of even like my peers don't even know what these terms mean. They don't know what statehood means. They don't know what taxation without representation really means. And I think that that is a key term that I've really been, you know, touching on lately, because a lot of people in could mistake taxation without representation to be some type of slogan that we're championing, but really it's a rallying cry. So that in itself is just something that I think sums up a lot of what statehood really means and what position we're in.
Mm-hmm. Beverly, like, I'm sorry, please. No, go ahead. Finish, Justin.
I'm just saying, as far as the people in our community, you know, that term could say a lot if people really understood what that means. You know, it's a form of tyranny, if you ask me. So, and that's what you see on a lot of the signs, like taxation without representation is tyranny. So, like I said, I'm just trying to enlighten people on what these things mean, you understand?
Mm-hmm. Beverly, what's different about this year's push? Yes, we had the parade out there and a lot of publicity, but why does there appear to be a different kind of feeling surge about the push this year?
Well, good evening, Harold, and good evening, D.C. What's different about this campaign is that we have raised this issue as a civil rights issue. And we are focusing on the individual rights of our people. For example, the laws that we make ourselves can be changed by an individual member of Congress. And our laws that the 702,000 residents of D.C. Elect members to pass can be changed by a single member from some other state. And our laws may not even reflect the values of our citizen. So we say this is a denial of our civil rights. We are entitled to be treated equal to all other American citizens. We are just like they are. Their story is our story. We make our laws. We run a school system. We issue driver's license. We operate as a state. We do everything that every other state does, except as a state, they can pass laws to reflect the values of their people, and their laws stand on their books. We pass laws to reflect the values of our people, and you might get a congressman from Wyoming that has less people than we do say, oh, I don't like that. Let me put a hold on that. We have to put a rider on their on a tax bill. They get to approve our budget. The taxes that we pay, we raise our own tax dollars, and we run a very good city. We are in better financial shape than most states. We have a AAA bond rating. We've balanced 20 budgets for 24 years. We have done it all right. And one thing that's different, we come to the table this time in a good position, in good standing. We've done everything right. We have balanced budgets. We have, and we have an educational campaign. One thing that we know, the American people do not know that the citizens of the District of Columbia, which is a larger population than the citizens of two other states, don't have a vote in on the House floor, and we have no representation at all in the Senate. Mm-hmm. We have our veterans that are deployed to defend democracy around the world, and they come home, and the Senate that votes to deploy them into war, they have no representation.
I want to piggyback on that and talk, because one of the things that you have, you know, kind of laid out, this is a hashtag facts kind of thing, everything that you've laid out, and yet there are the politics of this. Councilmember McDuffie, talk to me a little bit about the politics of it. If everything that Ms. Perry says is correct, and it is factual, it seems to me that it's a slam dunk, but politics are never a slam dunk. Talk to me about it.
It's not a slam dunk, but as Beverly just mentioned, I think we have a lot of momentum, at least as far as the House of Representatives is concerned. Politics is always an issue, but this year we go down there on the 19th of this month and a couple of days on Thursday with 86% of voters who supported this in the District of Columbia at the ballot in 2016. We go down there having more residents in our city, 702,000+, than Wyoming and Vermont, two states already in the union. We go down there with 219 members of the House of Representatives who co-sponsored H.R. 51, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton's bill. And so there's a lot of momentum there. And this is the very first hearing that we had in the House of Representatives on this in over 25 years. And so people are watching. I am encouraged by the things that we're seeing, the type of energy that's happening. Politics doesn't disappear out of the scenario. It also means that, you know, there is a Senate. There too, it's a bicameral legislature in Congress. That means there's a House, and we've got the numbers. We've got the majority in the House in terms of Democrats. But then there's a Senate, which is a different situation. And so while there's some concerns about what happens in the Senate, it's critical that we're ready to move when we have the opportunity in the House of Representatives. And I think we do have a great opportunity presented in the House of Representatives, and so we need people to turn out and flood the House on Thursday.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the push for D.C. statehood. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open. Again, give me a call at 202-319-7810. Okay, so Justin, taxation without representation. Tax dollars are green. They are neither blue nor red. They are neither conservative or progressive or liberal. So why do you believe that it has taken so long not to get this done? Do you think that race has something to do with it? Do you think that the ever-changing demographics of D.C. play a role?
I mean, I definitely think the demographics play a role, but like Councilman McDuffie said, you know, we work with the House and Senate, so no matter if the bill passes through the House or not, the Senate can still say no. And, you know, it's a lot of controversy as far as us gaining a senator, you know, what that would do as far as, like, voting power and things like that. Though I think that the climate always does affect what happens, but, like, this is something that hasn't been presented for, like, 26 years, and legally in the Constitution, you know, D.C. is not supposed to be a state. So, you know, things can be amended, and it is, I think, time for change, especially with 2020 on the horizon. I think, why not do that? You know, why not make D.C. a state and just make things more, just give us more the power that we deserve? Like they were saying, you know, we have just as many people here in Washington, D.C. We pay just as many taxes. You know, it's just a very, very vibrant city at the moment, and there is a lot going on. But all in all, I think statehood could be beneficial for everyone, especially the people, like I say, the natives and people within the city. And like what was said earlier, basically, like you said, tax dollars are blue, green, whatever, whatever. But at the same time, we should not be able to have something that can benefit us and impact our area be impacted by someone else from a different state. I mean, they don't know what is best for us.
And let me ask you, Justin, because speaking of a lot going on, you are planning something for tomorrow evening in reference to this push for statehood. Give me a quick rundown of what's on your agenda.
Well, basically, I'm the founder of Long Live Gogo. We've been behind the Mochella movement here in the city that help, you know, elevate a lot of different issues. And Thursday, the day of the hearing, the 19th, we'll be having a big rally on the mall alongside 51 for 51 and many other partners from 7 to 10 p.m. on 7th and Madison on the National Mall. And it will be also a performance by the Backyard Band. We'll have speakers and just really hope to use that time as a time to really, like I say, spread a message, help people to know that we are here with a purpose and help them to understand what the purpose is. So, okay. You know, Thursday, I hope, can be a big day for the city. And, you know, there have been many efforts around statehood, you know, just within this past week and in the past. But I feel, you know, lucky to be able to be a part of this movement and hopefully make the spectacle that, you know, we need to keep the momentum going.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And Beverly, what about that? This education piece, you touched on that earlier. Why is education so important? Who are we trying to inform?
We're trying to inform the American people. So let me just say, we can't convince Senator McConnell in Kentucky to be for statehood. But the citizens of Kentucky can convince him to do that. They can convince him that the rights of the citizens of the District of Columbia are no different than the rights of the citizens of Kentucky. You know, the Constitution doesn't separate us by geography. All the individual rights go to the people. And our rights are not blue or green. I have a right to be a Democrat, just like anybody in Utah has a right to be a Republican. The First Amendment says we have a right to free association. That doesn't, and what that means is that I have a right to be a Democrat. I have a right to be liberal. I have a right to be whatever I want to be. And my constitutional rights are the same as anyone else under the Constitution.
Hold that point, because I want to drill down on that specific argument after I take a quick break. I want to thank Justin Yachty Johnson, community activist, participating in this conversation. Good luck to you on tomorrow. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue the discussion about the push for D.C. statehood. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We will be taking your calls even after 7:30, so please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is in for Jeff Brown, and she's next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the new push for D.C. statehood. What is next? My guests are Kenyon McDuffie, Ward 5 D.C. Council Member, and Beverly Perry, Senior Advisor to D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to the phone lines, Beverly, I wanted to drill down a little bit on the conversation we were having right before the break. Okay, so you said the people of Kentucky can convince Senator Mitch McConnell about bringing this issue up in the Senate, because this needs to be passed in both houses of Congress, first of all. But why should, if I am from Kentucky or Missouri or Texas, why should I care if D.C. has representation in the House of Representatives and indeed the Senate? Why, I got mine. Why should I care?
Because I think, as a whole, I believe in the good of the American people. And I believe the American people feel that we all are equal. We are no different. And what we know, and we have talked to people from around the country, and what we know, no matter how conservative, people feel that we all have equal rights. And when we tell people, I mean, the American people do not know that we have no representation in the Congress. They do not know that. The American people do not know that Washington, D.C., has 702,000 citizens, more than a larger population than two states. The American people don't know that we pay the highest taxes per capita than any people from any state. We are a donor state. We pay about $3 to the federal treasury for every dollar we get back.
Okay, and I get this, and I was born here. I was raised out in the county. This has been an issue that has been discussed in my household for decades. Do I care? Absolutely. But I've also lived in other parts of the country, and I will tell you quite honestly, and I don't know who you've been talking to, people don't care. They don't care whether or not D.C. has a representation. D.C. has always been, up until recently, a majority black city. But when you live in places like Kentucky or Missouri, or when you live in Ohio, where there may be majority black cities, but there's still the larger part of the population is not black. And in some cases, not like, you know, D.C. has always been a Democratic stronghold. They don't care. And so how do you get them to care beyond having faith in them as the American people?
Harold, they should care.
They should.
Whether
absolutely.
They live in Ohio, whether they live in Kentucky, California, Massachusetts, if they are a citizen of these United States, they should care. Why? Because just like the citizens in those states, here in the District of Columbia, the 702 plus thousand residents are just like them. We come in all shapes, sizes, colors, backgrounds, ethnicities. And we're raising families just like them. We're educating our children just like them. We are, you know, competing for scarce resources and housing just like them. We are unemployed or fully employed just like them. And what they should care about is that the United States is the only democratic country in the world that I'm aware of where the citizens of the capital city do not have full voting representation in the national legislature. And that is something that everybody who lives in this country and calls themselves a member of our country as a citizen, they should care about.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Vanessa, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I want to know, how will statehood affect the current housing situation in Washington, D.C. with a HUD list that is backdated all the way from 2003. So what will that do? What will statehood do for housing?
Interesting. Anyone want to try to tackle that? Beverly or Councilmember McDuffie?
The same way we make our laws as a local jurisdiction today, we're going to continue to make our laws, if and when we become a state. The beauty of being able to make local laws impacting housing and do some of the things we're doing around our Housing Production Trust Fund, in which we put more than $100 million in over the last several years, is that we don't have to worry about Congress tinkering with our budgets. We don't have to worry about riders that prevent us from doing things that the people of the District of Columbia have elected us to do. And so whether it's an issue of housing, whether it's an issue of our schools and education, to your listeners and residents across the District of Columbia, whether it's additional about an issue of workforce development or public safety, when we pass our laws, we don't have to look over our shoulders like we do today and say there's a rider that prevents us from doing certain things that we as a city that raise our own taxes and spend our own money right now have to look over our shoulder to wonder what some lone Republican who has zero interest and zero investment in what happens within our boundaries can pass legislation or a rider to affect how we do things in the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Vanessa. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Can you give me, Beverly, some flat-footed, plain-spoken thoughts about how things would be different, let us say, if D.C. Were to acquire statehood? And I mean outside of the congressional oversight that would go out the window. But for those who, and this is part of that education piece, how would D.C. be different?
D.C. will be the exact same. It will be seamless. What people don't understand, the federal district that was established by the Constitution is basically the federal triangle, the mall. And what we have done, we have drawn a demarcation to show that boundary. Our taxes are the same. We right now, we pay both federal and local taxes. We will pay the same. We will have that demarcation that the federal district will basically be that federal compound where the White House and the Capitol and all those government buildings are. Our neighborhoods would be the same. So it will be seamless. There are some things that will improve. When we go back to the housing, I mean, some of the zoning laws and some, we are hoping to acquire some of the land. You know, the federal government owns like over half of our land. And so we are hoping to get some of that land. So there could be a lot of things that could be different, things that we will have more of an ability to build things in places that we don't have right now. But other than that, it's a seamless transaction from the public's perspective.
Yesterday, when the mayor led the parade, she had the military veterans with her. And while military veterans have always been impacted by this, that was a highlighted push to address this issue. Where did that idea come from?
Well, because we had a poll conducted. And when you ask people, and you said people don't care. If you ask people, and the Gallups did a poll, if you ask people, should D.C. become a state? They say, no, why should they? But if you ask people, should veterans be deployed to fight democracy around the world without a senator to represent them to vote on their deployment, they said, well, absolutely. What we found out from our poll is that veterans, people are most compassionate with a veteran story. Think about it. In many of the wars that the country has fought, D.C. has sent more people than some of the states. We have lost 200,000 people in wars. And those people didn't have a senator to talk to. You know, I talked to someone yesterday that went to one of the military academies, that went to, had a friend from another state to sponsor their application to a military academy. It is a lot of things that we are denied, and people don't understand. We are treated differently. That's why we say now, this is a civil rights issue. It's a civil rights issue because we're not treated equally.
Has it always been a civil rights issue?
Well, I don't know if people raised it as that. People raised it. We have, in the past, we've been mostly focused on the taxation without representation. But when you think about it, you think about the history of the District of Columbia. In early 1900s, the largest population of black people in America, concentrated population, was in D.C. D.C. came here. Slaves came here to help build this capital. And they came here because the word got out that you could work and get educated in D.C. So we had a migration of black people that came to the district. And if you read Chocolate City, it will tell you how we became Chocolate City.
Mm-hmm. But now we're more like a latte.
But you know what, Harold, though? It's also a human rights issue, right?
Talk to me about
that. And that should resonate with everybody, whether you're black, white, or somewhere in between. It's a human rights issue. In fact, the United Nations Human Rights Committee cites the district's lack of democratic equality as a violation of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, a treaty to which the United States has been a signatory since 1977. Right. And so it's a civil rights issue. It's an issue of fairness. It's an issue of justice. And it's also a human rights issue as well.
Yesterday, the mayor brought up the issue that there was, I believe, a Republican congressman who wanted to talk to Jack Evans about his problems and the like. She said, I'm paraphrasing, we will not be distracted by that. What are your thoughts about someone trying to bring the controversy regarding your council colleague into this discussion?
It's a red herring. It is a distraction. And any state USA, you can go and find, you know, somebody who is elected to office who perhaps is under investigation. And so what's happened in the District of Columbia, while unfortunate and disheartening, it is not unique. And it happens every day, and probably more so in other jurisdictions. I don't want to start naming names, but, you know, states like Illinois and New York and other places have similar issues. And quite frankly, in D.C., we have far fewer than a lot of these other places. And you can pick your Republican-leaning state and find, you know, equally as egregious issues that are occurring. And so that's a red herring. It is a distraction. I want to focus on the issues around, the fact that this is a human rights issue that, like I said earlier, we're the only democratic country in the world where citizens of the capital denied full voting representation. And it's far too long. We need to change this injustice.
If D.C. were to achieve statehood, would you think that the legislative process in, whether it's in number or anything else, could that change? Could there be, like we see in Maryland, you know, where you have, instead of, you know, council members, that you could have, you know, D.C. state delegates and D.C., you know, state senators and the like? Or do you think that things will pretty much stay the same?
No, we have already outlined that in our Constitution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you recall back in 2016, in order to get prepared for this moment, we went through a process and we drafted a Constitution. So under our Constitution, our city council will become our state legislature. And we will add an additional 8. So we will still have 8 wards, and we can call them counties if we want to, but we will have 2 representatives in the legislature from each ward. And so it will be just like Maryland. Our ANC commissioners, our Constitution provides for our ANC commissioners as our first line of elected officials. And we will have our state legislature, and the council will be the state assembly.
And the mayor would be governor.
And the mayor will be governor. And I won't say if, I would say when.
Well, when we come back from this break, we will talk more about the push for D.C. statehood, including what's the plan for tomorrow and beyond. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. We are continuing our discussion about the push for D.C. statehood. I was talking about the testimony on Capitol Hill coming up tomorrow. It's actually Thursday, as well as the event that is going to be held by Justin Yachty Johnson. That is going to be on Thursday evening. What is going to happen, Beverly, on Thursday morning during this testimony? What can we expect to see?
Well, what we can expect is this. We have heard that the committee, there are 41 members of the House Oversight Committee. We have heard that they expect a good turnout. Mayor Bowser is the first witness. Chairman Mendelson is the second witness. The Chief Financial Officer, Mr. DeWitt, is the third witness. Then there will be a veterans statement. And then there will be an opposition statement by a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will all present their testimony, and then the members will have a 5-minute round of questions. Mm-hmm. And the mayor plans to tell our story. She plans to tell our story. You know, what is the opposition? People have said we were too small. The Constitution doesn't put a size on, and then we have more people than two states. People have said we couldn't govern. We've balanced 24 budgets and now have a AAA bond rating, which is the envy of most states. You know, they have said the Constitution doesn't permit it because it has to be a federal district. The Constitution, we have drawn the boundaries to satisfy the constitutional requirement of a federal district. Some would say that the 23rd Amendment prevents it because the three electoral votes. Well, you know, when Congress added the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution, it wasn't self-executing. They had to pass a statute to offer to commit those three electoral votes to the District of Columbia. The same way they passed a statute to offer those three electoral votes, they can pass a law to repeal those three electoral votes, and the electoral votes will go to the state. So every argument that people have put up to say all the reasons we can't become a state, all of those arguments have been, you know, refuted by constitutional scholars.
So those are the can'ts, but what about the should nots? Because that's different than why you can't, because the can'ts have to do with facts and the Constitution and everything that you just said. And so if all of the can'ts have been disposed of, I ask again, as I talked about in the beginning of this conversation, why shouldn't this happen? If this is an American issue, then why is it that it appears the Democrats, the progressives are for this, and the conservatives and the Republicans are against this? Somebody tell me something.
But you said it earlier. It's politics, mm-hmm, essentially what it boils down to. It shouldn't, you know, when I think about, you know, personally, my family, I have a wife and two daughters, you know, whether you live in Utah or you live in Wyoming, you know, you're a family. You want to be able to call up your two senators or your representatives in the House of Representatives to advocate for or against something. We talked about why the mayor rode out and had the veterans out, because that's something that, you know, most families can identify with, even those who haven't lost a loved one. I recently, my 20-year-old nephew, Elijah, just wrapped up basic training and is finishing up some other training down at Fort Sill in Oklahoma, and he might get called to duty to serve his country, right? But yet he lives in the District of Columbia, and therefore he does not have the same voting representation in Congress as his peers in Oklahoma, where he's going through training right now. And so, you know, when it boils down to it, it's politics. You know, whether you know, you're a Democrat or Republican, and if you are a Republican, the question is whether you want a state that is more than likely to have two senators and a Democrat in the House. And so I think it is politics, Harold, and I think a lot of people say that. Some people cite the Constitution and all the reasons why this shouldn't happen. But I think Beverly just talked about how you dispel the arguments that people are using in the Constitution, namely, you know, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, where it says that Congress shall exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over the District of Columbia. But they forget in the same breath that Article 4, Section 3, the Admissions Act, allows Congress to admit new states into the Union. And so you show me a reason in the Constitution otherwise why it shouldn't happen, I'll raise you two.
Yeah, because we even said this during the break. I said this is not like the annexation of Hawaii or Alaska, and one would argue that based on the facts that you've laid out, Beverly, it would be a whole lot easier than all of that.
But let me tell you, Harold, you know, we thought the same way about the LGBT community.
What do you mean?
Whoever thought that they would be permitted to get married?
Mm-hmm. Or blacks to vote, or women to vote.
Or women to vote.
Yeah.
And so over the history of time, people have been denied rights, and that's what Congress does. Congress corrects the wrong. You know, the Constitution empowers Congress to address political questions, and that is to correct the wrongs of people. And that's what Congress has to do here. And why do I think this is going to pass this time? Why do I think we can reach the Senate? It's because the sensitivity of America has changed. I mean, for gay people to be able to get married, the sensitivity of America has changed. And, you know, Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And people now understand that. And our young millennials, they are progressive. They ain't having it. The same way with gun control. I mean, these young people is bringing attention to gun control.
But we are also arguably more politically polarized now than we have been in 50 years. And with that said, you may have a segment of the population that does support what appears to be right, what appears to be American. But then, as we saw when the last time this issue bubbled up to the surface, there was a question about, well, if D.C. gets a representation, in the House and, of course, in the Senate, that would mean that Utah, a Republican state, would get additional representation. Is, as far as you know, are there any other kinds of negotiations similar to that to keep the political balance in order to allow this to happen?
No. Hmm. Harold, you know, I am so pleased that deal fell apart. And I think Mrs. Norton, now that rejected that deal, I think she would say the same, that she's very pleased. We are not a half a citizen. We are not two-thirds of a citizen. The residents of the District of Columbia are full American citizens. They do everything that every other citizen does in every state. We are no different. We don't need a half a loaf.
So no deal, just give us the right.
Yeah, how we should not have to, as D.C. residents, negotiate away some right in order to get another right. We should not have to give up a right that every other citizen throughout the states in the United States has in order to get some other right. I mean, we should be beyond those types of negotiations and really be consistent with demanding our full voting representation and statehood in our Congress as well.
Well, I want to thank both of you for coming in and sharing your perspectives, and I'm sure that not only will the district residents and members of the DMV community, but indeed let us hope that the entire country is watching not only what happens on Thursday, but beyond. So thank you again. I want to thank both of you, Beverly Perry, and of course, Ward 5 DC Councilman Kenyon McDuffie. And good luck this week.
Thanks so much, Harold. Let's flood the house on Thursday.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, ma'am. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.